welcome in. It is Sunday Mass here, Sunday service. Reverend Arcan, nice to have you with us today on the holiest of days, Evacuation Day, almost. It's technically tomorrow, but the parade's today. Hope you're enjoying yourself out there. It's a nice enough day. Wouldn't say it's a beaut. I've seen better. But it's not raining, dumping all over everybody, at least not where I am, so I don't know where you are. It is good enough, exactly. Jacob Lasner, back behind the glass. He'll be taking your phone calls at 617-779-7937. I want to say props to Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and that one call-in segment from Andrew Razor Raycroft, who I understand is very busy. And I understand also this is a very big day for high school hockey here in the state of Massachusetts. I know that my Dedham Marauders are taking on Winthrop today, and I was keeping up with the game. I know it was scoreless after one period. Jacob, can you look this up? Can you see how Dedham did against Winthrop? Because all of my drinking buddies over at the Village Manor, I know, are very invested in this game. And I want to make sure that if they win, that I let everyone know. And if they don't, then I'm not going to talk about it. No, I'm just kidding. I'll give Winthrop their props, too. Whoever
you
it is.
You want to know what the score was?
Division 4, yes. Give it to me.
Final score in the state championship, Division 4, Winthrop 3, Dedham 0.
Ah, too bad. Too bad. It was a magical run. It was a magical run for the Marauders. They should be very, very proud of themselves. They got all the way to the Garden. But, yeah, Winthrop, the Vikings, a tough team. And they come away with the win. Congratulations to Winthrop. Get them next year, Dedham. And win or lose, we booze over at the Manor. That's all I have to say about that. Anyways, we got a lot to get to today, not just high school hockey or college hockey for that matter. Tough one for the Eagles. Sorry about that, Jacob. We can talk a little Hockey East later on in the show, although I think Bridget and Scott did a nice job of covering that there in the last segment. I always love some good Hockey East talk. I really
do. Too soon.
I know, it's too soon for you. There's still the big tournament, so I wouldn't get too concerned about it. But I think, that was an ugly one for sure. And as far as the Bruins go, I mean, listen, if you want to talk Bruins after that game yesterday, I think we're better off with Dedham High School and BC and the rest of Hockey East. But we'll go ahead and start with some other topics for the day. We will get to hockey, I think, in the next hour. Give it a little room to breathe after another fantastic edition of Sunday Skate. So let's go ahead and start with the Cooper Cup fallout, which continues here into in through the weekend as the New England Patriots miss out on Cooper Cup. Now, it seems like Patriots Nation in general has gotten over this relatively quickly. There's some people who are still upset. I am one of those people. I'm very annoyed by this. I'm annoyed because whenever I brought up the idea of trading for him and taking the decision out of his hands, I was told, no, you don't want to do that. Can't give up a 7th or a 6th round pick. You know, Cooper Kupp may not be what he once was. He's on the downslope of his career. You don't want to pay that much. The signing bonus is too much, et cetera, et cetera. There was a million excuses why it didn't make sense to trade for Cooper Kupp. And these were generally from people and reporters who I like, who I have on my shows, but they both wanted Cooper Kupp on the team. They thought that he would be a good addition to the team. They thought that acquiring Cooper Kupp made sense for the team to do. But they didn't think it made sense to trade for him, that it made more sense to let him hit the market and join a bidding war with all the other teams in the NFL, or all the other teams that need help at wide receiver. That's most of them, all right? It's not all of them, but it's most of them. And you're in that group as well. And as we know, you're considered one of the least attractive destinations in the entire freaking league. And yet, trading for him didn't make sense. Letting him hit the market, that did make sense. That, I'll never understand that. I really won't. We can agree to disagree. You want to call in at 617-779-7937 and explain it again to me like I'm a small child. I'd be happy to entertain your call. But I'll tell you, I will never understand that. I will never understand how that made sense. In context, out of context, there's no world where that made sense. And now he's gone. And for anybody who said, well, you know, once he hit the market, once we found out what the ask was, that's when I knew we weren't going to get him. No. Once they decided not to trade for him, once that was sort of out there that they weren't trading for him, that's when I knew they weren't going to get him. It was pretty obvious right there that that was the only way. If you wanted Cooper Kupp, the only way to get him was to trade for him. That was it. That was the only avenue that you had, Patriots. You weren't going to win the bidding war. Even if you won the bidding war, there's a chance Cooper Kupp would have gone somewhere else. Just ask Chris Godwin. You won the bidding war for Chris Godwin. Godwin said no thanks. No thanks for the $20 million. And I know people are dubious about that. Jacob, did you hear? Because I heard Jones and Keefe were talking about this, and they were both dubious about the $20 million thing. But then I didn't get to hear why. I didn't hear why they were dubious about it. I didn't get what was called into question. But either way, because it suits my argument right now, I'm choosing to believe the $20 million story is true, that Godwin turned it down and decided he'd rather go back to Tampa Bay than play in New England and make $20 million additional dollars. And if that's true, he may have other reasons, but it does go to show that this is not a place wide receivers want to play, despite all those recruitment videos from Drake May over the past year. And listen, I'm sure there's some wide receiver, other players all over the league who saw Drake May and thought, wow, that kid's pretty good, but I don't want to go play there. I mean, that's basically on the offensive side of the ball anyway. It's exactly what's been happening. The fallout continues. Karen Garigian had a piece on Travis Hunter and what the Patriots do now at wide receiver and alluded to a piece she wrote, I think, on Thursday. This was Karen on Thursday. And it's Patriots are definitely among Cooper Kupp suitors, but with a caveat. If it was just among Cooper Kupp suitors, I don't like it. With a caveat, I really don't like it. And what do you know? They didn't end up landing them. Huh, weird. Maybe they had too many caveats. Karen writes, the Patriots are in on Cooper Kupp, but at the right price. According to a source, the Patriots are currently interested in bringing in the veteran wideout. However, Kupp's asking price at the moment is a bit too steep. Certainly possible another team, and there's reportedly five in the mix, will meet with the former Super Bowl MVP's contract demands. For now, the Patriots are content to see if Kupp alters his stance. So the strategy here to acquire this player was not to trade for him and surely get him and surely bring him in and pay a little bit extra and give up a seventh round pick. Extra money, which, by the way, you have plenty of. You still have the most cap space of any team in the NFL. You could sign three Cooper Kupps if you wanted to. But no, that wasn't in the budget. That wasn't in the blueprint. Instead, they decided to let him hit the market with his big demand, with his big contract ask, and then wait around and see if he alters his stance. Alters his stance to say, you know what? Here are these other here's the Seattle Seahawks, for example, offering me $15 million. But, you know, I think I'm going to go play in New England for less than that because it's really a great situation over there. Like, alter his stance. Why would he alter his stance? You don't think anyone's going to offer, going to match what he wants? Just say you're not in on him. That's basically what you're saying. Like, that's not a strategy. That's not a strategy to acquire a player. That's a strategy to get fans and people like me off your back. Yeah, we're working on it, all right? He's just asking for a lot of money. We really do want him. But, you know, we're not sure about $15 million. Okay. Okay, yeah, that's a lot, you know, considering how good your wide receiver room is. And the Patriots...
It reminds me of the way that the Red Sox go about their free agency.
It's similar. It's very similar. And I've asked this question before. Would you rather get yanked around like this, or would you rather get lied to? You know, like, would you rather, and that's not what I meant, would you rather be lied to and yanked around like this, or would you rather that they just come out and say, we're not in on this player, and just nip it in the bud right there, and you don't have to have any sort of emotional roller coaster of will they, won't they get him, or will they sign him, is he going to make the trade, or any of that, just say, nope, not interested in this guy, not really going to make much of an effort to get him out of your mind, on to the next thing. What would you rather have? Because in this case with the Cooper Kupp thing, I almost don't even know, I can't tell which one's better. They both suck. Like, honestly, they're both sucky ways to get this information.
I think either way, the fans are not going to be happy. The second way, the next question that fans are going to be asking is, why not? You know?
Right.
And the first way, it's just like giving them false hope straight up and knowing that nothing's going to happen. I mean, I've lived through this my entire life as a Jets and Mets and Islander fan, so...
Mm. Yeah, I mean, listen, we all have our we all have our crosses to bear, for sure. And for the Patriots, we've had a phenomenal run of success, and all that's true and everything fine. But we all agreed that wide receiver help was something that they really needed. And as each day goes by, as each day of free agency goes by, as each trade gets made for DK Metcalf or Deebo Samuel or whoever it is that's out there that's on the trade block, I have some names that I think are still out there now that the Patriots may want to look into exploring, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the free agents who are left aren't very exciting. And the draft, which is what Karen was writing about today, she talks about Travis Hunter again. And I know I'm the Travis Hunter guy, but listen, I mean, what else is there? What else are you going to do? Cooper Kupp's gone. You're not getting him. DK Metcalf, gone. Not getting him. You want to really take a good long look at Steph Diggs? At Amari Cooper? At Keenan Allen? I guess Allen out of the three of them is probably the best, but... Diggs is probably the bad if he's healthy, but, you know, he missed most of the year. Allen's certainly on the downswing. Cooper, I don't think, has anything left in the tank. And that's basically it. Tyler Lockett, I mean, like, who else is there? There's nothing really to look forward to or feel good about. It may have to be Travis Hunter now. And not just from a help the wide receiver room, but this offseason is now suddenly starting to lose a little bit of its luster. Like, we're all happy with the defense got better. I think we all are. No one's upset by that. No one really thinks it was a bad move to sign Williams, except for NFL Network. Someone on NFL Network graded it an F. Said they paid him way too much money, hasn't played enough of the snaps, was only good because of the guys around him. An F? I think that's harsh. I think some of those guys were maybe a little bit better because Milton Williams was playing with them, but what do I know? At any rate, most people liked them. Most people around here loved them. Loved all those moves. Spillane, Davis, Williams, all of them. I mean, Landry, I didn't hear one complaint really about anyone around here. And the only complaints are, well, why aren't you continuing to put the pressure on? Why aren't you continuing to spend money? Why isn't this something that is a full court press here? Why does it seem like you all kind of took your feet off the gas? And that's a fair question. That's a fair question for these Patriots. You come out here, you have a big press conference, show off all your new players, demand pats on the back, really, with the Crafts there and Wolf, and to a lesser extent, Vrabel. I think Vrabel treated it, though, as there was still more to be done. But you got to do it. You got to do it. I'm sorry, Mac Hollins isn't enough. It just isn't. And the Patriots, I believe, still have the most cap space of any team. Any team in the NFL. Patriots have $101 million in cap space. Next highest is the Cardinals, then the Seahawks, and the Chargers, Titans, Lions. The Cardinals are second with $67 million. So the Patriots could have signed Cooper Kupp for $20 million, which is what he would have gotten if you had traded for him, because you would have had to pay the signing bonus. It was $12 million plus an $8 million signing bonus plus a seventh or whatever it is you would have had to give up. Probably wouldn't have been much because no one else offered anything. If they did, the Rams would have traded him. So seventh round pick and $20 million, and you would still have the most cap space in the NFL. You'd still have more than anybody else. You would have $81 million, which is $14 million more than the Cardinals, who are right behind you. And that's with signing Cooper Kupp. You could sign him twice, and then you'd only be $6 million behind the Cardinal. I mean, like, come on. What are we talking about here? You didn't like the asking price? Why? And why are you behaving like you're not a desperate team? Why are you behaving like you're some good team with a good wide receiver room who can afford to pass on Cooper Kupp and who doesn't need to extend themselves for DK Metcalf and get into that sweepstakes? And it's no big deal if T. Higgins goes and signs with the Bengals. All of these things are catastrophic for you. You need help more than almost any team in the league at that position. And there's some teams with bad wide receiver rooms. You seen the Raiders wide receiver room lately? It's horrific. Still might be better than yours. That's where we are. That's where you are. And I would love it if just for a day, this team acted accordingly. It may be a stinky cologne desperation, but, you know, you got to wear it sometimes. And right now is one of those times, Patriots. You can't afford to turn your nose up. You can't afford to talk about a bad deal. It's too high of an asking price. For what? $15 million too high of an asking price? You have $100 million in space. Oh, well, we got to sign all the rookies. You could sign five rookie classes with this money. What's actually happening right now? What's really going on with this? Because there's no reason they should have got beat out for Cooper Kupp. There really isn't. And the fact that they did, and the fact that he's going to Seattle, a team that, by the way, needs him. They traded one of their best wide receivers, and they released the other one. They got Smith and Jigba left, and now they got a guy who can run with him. Meanwhile, the Patriots are still looking for one building block in that room. and they just can't do it. Unless they draft Travis Hunter, and then everything's going to turn around. You watch. So there's that. That's one big story for the day. Another one is the Celtics, who last night held on, and I do mean held on, to beat the Brooklyn Nets. Interesting game last night, for sure. What was with Jason Tatum and those behind-the-back passes? Like, why was he so insistent on trying to throw a behind-the-back pass? Was it some sort of thing yesterday? Was it like behind-the-back pass day? You know how every day is like some weird day? It's, oh, it's pizza day. Oh, it's taco day. Today's National Freeze Pops Day. Like, whatever it is. It was yesterday like National Behind-the-Back Pass Day? Because it seemed like Jason Tatum was really, really into the idea of trying to throw one. Now, it ended up being a win, and the Celtics came away with it with a win. It was not... It was very hairy down the stretch there, as you can hear from Scal and Drew Carter, as they said as much down the stretch. But Celtics come away with a win. This is the soft underbelly of the schedule. They should be laying waste to most of these teams until the end of the month when they have Memphis. But Memphis kind of sucks, too. Cleveland just blew out Memphis the other night and then had their subs in for almost the entire fourth quarter. So, I don't know. I'm not really scared of Memphis. John Morant's pretty good. I like Triple J. I don't really think that they're a team to be scared of, and I don't think the Celtics should be scared of them either. A team they could overlook, just like they almost overlooked Brooklyn yesterday. Celtics will be off until Tuesday when they play Brooklyn again. Hopefully, whatever that was, you won't see again. You probably won't because Cam Thomas is out for the rest of the year. Then there's the Boston Bruins, who are, I think, done and should probably start tanking at this point. Going for that draft pick. I'm not sure exactly who's in this draft. I don't think, you know, I'm not really up to speed on all the prospects and people coming out here. Jacob, you might be able to help me with that. Is this going to be a good NHL draft? Are people considering this like a high-end draft this year?
No.
Good. Great. Terrific. Well, that's good. Anyway, I mean, listen, high-end or not, you still got to go with what's going on here. You got to read the writing on the wall. This thing's over. This is who this team really is. This is who this team's been all year. Let's be honest. They got a little bit of a dead cat bounce there from blowing up the team. Same thing happens when you fire the coach. Not really all that unusual. And then they go right back to being themselves again. And that was, I mean, I don't know. That second period last night was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Jeremy Swayman, not a good game. Certainly not a good game. But how are you gonna blame him on a period that get outshot 20-0? I mean, you know, 37 shots, I think he had, 33 saves. Like, that's not a bad night. But it was a bad night for the rest of the team. I thought the team was awful. And normally on a night like that, you'd give Swayman the benefit of the doubt, or you'd give any goalie the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, you know, that wasn't really on them last night. A couple of those goals were soft, but what are you going to do? They were getting outplayed. But Jeremy Swayman hasn't earned that right this year. He hasn't. You say that about a goalie who's having a good or at least, you know, average year. Well, you know, you're going to have some bad nights. Well, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. That wasn't really his fault. Sorry, you know, you gotta be able to step up and steal some of these games, or at least keep him in it, even when you're getting bombarded, which he was. I mean, he absolutely was. That team had nothing out there in that game. Nothing for the Tampa Bay attack, that's for sure. It was relentless. And as Razor said, I mean, that's a team that's getting ready for the playoffs. That's a team that's getting their affairs in order. That's not you. That's not what the Bruins are. They're still not far off, but at this point, I don't really think that's a realistic goal anymore. I don't know if it ever really was. I think they're all finished, and that's fine. And finally, the last topic of the day, which we'll get to in the next hour, is the Red Sox rotation has got the nerds buzzing like you wouldn't believe. In fact, FanGraphs, and I have friends who work at FanGraphs, so I just want to say you're all nerds. And I say that with all the love in my heart.
Brag, bro.
Thank you very much. I know it is. But to my nerd friends over at FanGraphs, Red Sox fans will be happy to hear this. If you care what the nerds think. And if you don't, then whatever. But if you do, FanGraphs has the Boston Red Sox rotation as the fourth best rotation in Major League Baseball. How's that grab you? I know. I hear that. I'm like, all right, nerds. All right, pretty good. Let's hear it. Why do you think that? And then they give you this big graph that I can't read with these stats I've never heard of, and I have no idea how to calculate them or what they even represent. But it doesn't matter. I see a number four. That's all I need. It was Dodgers, Phillies, I think Braves, and then Red Sox, number four. Number one in the American League, number four in all of baseball. And I think that's pretty exciting, honestly. I mean, listen, I don't get too jazzed up about lists like that. But when someone like Fangraphs comes out and puts out something like that, and we just heard who the top three are going to be. We're not sure what the actual rotation for the whole season will be yet, but Cora did say that your opening day starter will be Crochet, and then you got Houck, and then you got Buehler, and then, you know, who knows after that at 4 and 5. Garrett Crochet going to be pitching today as the Red Sox continue with their Grapefruit League schedule. We'll have some thoughts on that, and Rafael Devers a little bit later on. I also have a little bit of a problem with the lineup today. A little bit of a problem with who's DHing. I'll get into that a little bit later on in the show as well. But first, here's Jacob Lassner. He'll get you caught up on what's trending. The number is 617-779-7937 if you want to jump on. We'll come back and talk some Celtics right after this.
Christian Erkan here, WEEI, Boston Sports Original, New England Sports Original. Nice to have you with us here today. The phone number is 617-779-7937. We'll get to your phone calls here in just a moment. Do want to talk some Celtics here, as I do think that was an interesting one yesterday. Jason Tatum trying to set the record for behind-the-back passes. Jaylen Brown leaving the game with back spasms. And as you just heard in trending from Jacob Lassner, Peyton Pritchard setting the record for the most three-pointers off the bench ever in the history of the NBA. He's at, what is it, 219? Was that the number? Is that what I heard?
220.
220. Okay, so he passed 219, got to 220, and is now the all-time leader in threes off the bench. Congratulations to him, and congratulations to the Celtics for holding on for the win there. A little touch and go down the stretch, but a game that they needed—well, not needed, but a game that they had. And I think that with Porzingis coming back and playing that way, really some clutch moments from him. That three-pointer, the three-point play. He had some nice defensive plays in that game. I think, in general, you see what his presence means, and you see how important it is. And you see that maybe not against a team like Brooklyn, but when they go up against the Nuggets or when they go up against teams with real serious big, Oklahoma City and Chet Holmgren, teams like that, if he's there as opposed to when he's not there, you really notice. You definitely notice. I think they probably could have beat Brooklyn last night without him, although it was a very close game. I think the strategy would have been different. I think they had the talent, obviously, to do it. But when I look at the great teams in the league, and there's not that many, and the Celtics are one of them, but when I look around at the other ones, I'm starting to doubt a little more whether or not the Celtics at 80%, 60%, whatever percent of their starters are going to be healthy and ready to play once the playoffs come around, I do wonder how much of that is necessary at this point. To have full strength in your roster. Porzingis out there, Holiday out there, White out there, obviously Brown and Tatum out there, Horford out there. Horford, who's been playing great in the stead of Porzingis, but against the very, very good team, you can still see that he provides something that you don't get from anybody else, and that few teams in the league can say they get. Brown with the back spasms I don't love. I see that, and I don't feel good about it. But then I remember it's the soft underbelly of the schedule and that the Celtics have really only a couple legit challenges from here on out. They're basically locked into that 2 seed. I don't think there's any chance they can even catch Cleveland now unless they won out and Cleveland lost out or something. Even that, did they clinch? They haven't clinched yet, have they? No, I don't think so.
The Celtics?
The Cleveland's clinched their division, but they haven't clinched the East yet.
No.
There's still enough games mathematically for that to happen, but it's basically over. I mean, it's over. The Celtics have clinched the playoff spot, and Cleveland has too, and no one else in the East has, by the way, which I think is interesting. Over on the other side, Oklahoma City is the only team that's clinched in the West, as it's a lot more competitive over there. But either way, Celtics should be in good shape here going forward. Let's go to the phone. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. I was talking about the Division IV Boys Hockey Championship game at TD Garden today between my Dedham Marauders. I say that like I went there. I didn't even go to the high school. I just live in Dedham, and I'm friends with some of the parents on the team. But my Marauders fell to Winthrop 3-0, your final score. And for more on that, let's go to our good friend Paulie in Dedham, who I believe was in attendance at the game. Paulie, how we doing?
What's up, brother? Thanks.
How's it going?
We thank you for your support.
Of course. Yeah,
it was a heck of a game. It was a great game. Two evenly matched teams. Mm-hmm. Winthrop came in as the 5 seed. had them as the sixth seed, and it showed in the play. They were evenly matched. I thought Denham had slightly more. They had more talent on the ice.
Okay.
But Winthrop was well coached. They played a fundamentally sound game defense, particularly when they got the 1-0 lead in the second period. Went 1-0 into the third, and they played well. They trapped us well. Their goalie was outstanding.
Sounds like
goalie.
It.
His number was number one, and for good reason. He was the star of the game. He was the difference in the game. That went from goaltender and the way they were coached. They really played good team defense and keeping Denham had a great first line. Dunn, Halton, and Lauder.
Yeah, and I know they got a lot of seniors, so it's going to be
Lauder took a cheap penalty about 3 minutes left in the game, and about 30 seconds, a minute later, maybe 2.5 minutes left in the game, Winthrop cashed in on it. And that last goal, I left right there. That last goal must have been an open net goal. But
You didn't stay to the end, Paulie? Come on, you can't leave. Paulie, you can't leave the game early. Come on, you know better than that. You can't leave those kids. You got to be there to cheer him at the end on a great season. Come on, you got to salute him. Thanks for the call, Paulie. Appreciate it. Paulie will just talk forever. But you can't leave the game early. You got to salute the seniors at least. Come on. I'm saying this. I didn't even go at all. But I couldn't go because I had to be on the air at 11. So what am I going to do? I can't go down to the garden and then come back out here and do the show. That was unfeasible. So I'm doing my best. In retrospect, I wasn't there to support them, but I'm here to say great season. Let's go to Gail in Rhode Island. She has a thought on the Patriots and their options now that Cooper Kupp is off the board. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I love your show. I thought the Patriots or another team grabbed somebody from the USFL, and they did really well last year. So I was thinking maybe Vrabel is thinking something like that. I don't know. What do you think?
Of the USFL? they're probably at that point, right? You know, if that's what they're thinking about doing, that's probably the point that they're at, Gail. Thanks for the call. I would say, if there's still NFL players they can look at. There's still like NFL wide receivers that they can take a look at before they go to the USFL or perhaps the CFL, the Canadian Football League. The Arena League, I think, is still in existence. I heard they were thinking about bringing back NFL Europe. Which, I don't know, NFL Europe I always thought was a cool idea, but it didn't really catch on there. NFL football, pro American football in Europe, just, I don't know. I don't know if they don't like it because it's American. I don't know, it's just too much pads and stuff. Like, they play rugby and stuff over there. It's like, yeah, man. You ever meet, like, a Scottish guy who's, like, really into rugby? And they think that football players are all wimps because they wear too much pads and stuff, and this is like meathead Scottish guy, and he's like, oi, or whatever they say. I don't know. Like, they're super into rugby. Irish guy, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm sure there's plenty of Irish guys real into rugby. But yeah, I feel like it wasn't a thing over there. They had the teams, and they sort of used it as a feeder system, but the NFL expected that league was going to really catch on and lead to European leagues that start off on their own, and all this interest was going to come, and that there was going to be all these players, and it just never really did. There's some European player. Like, there's been German guys in the NFL. Sebastian Vollmer was from Germany. There's been, you know, international players for sure in the NFL, and there still are plenty of them now. But it doesn't – it's like soccer in America, kind of. You know, it's kind of the same thing, only – the big difference is, and this has been talked about ad nauseum, is that every kid in America plays soccer. Every kid in America from the age of like 3 on plays soccer. And for whatever reason, it just doesn't take hold the way it does in other places. Football is a uniquely American sport that other countries were adopting and adapting, but you need all this stuff to play it. Like, you need to have 25 people to play it, you know, and then you got to have the right plays. You got to have uprights on the field. You got to have the whole field painted. Everyone's got to wear pads. Everyone's got to wear helmets. You know, it's like a whole thing. And, you know, it never really became the international game that they were expecting, which is so funny because in America, the NFL is the king. I mean, it just prints money. And American basketball, you know, other sports that were invented in America have taken off around the world, but not football for some reason. And I don't understand that. I don't get why that is. hockey's a game, you know, like hockey, you got to play, and hockey wasn't invented here, but you know what I mean? Like it's a game where you have to get up really early for ice time and bring your kids there at like 6 a.m. whenever you want to go. You sign your kid up for youth hockey. You got to be there at the ass crack of dawn. You know, you got to get all the same pads. You got to learn how to skate. You got to get skates. You got to get a stick. You got to get a helmet, all that stuff. And yet they play hockey everywhere. You know, they play it all over the world. Much more internationally popular than football is, which, you know, I'm surprised. I still to this day find that very surprising. 617-779-7937. What'd she say? We should go to the Patriots, should go to the USFL, try and find some players there. Who was she talking about? Who did they sign from the USFL last year?
I don't remember.
I don't remember that. Maybe they one of the offensive linemen who they grabbed off the scrap heap was a USFL guy. I'm not sure. But either way, you shouldn't be doing things you did last year ever again, right? What's one thing that went right last year that you're like, yeah, let's do more of that? I can't think of anything. So any decision that they made last year, or really in the last 2 years, isn't anything that I'd want to repeat or replicate or try and go out there and keep doing. I just don't see the point. And I think Vrabel's conscious of that. I think Vrabel kind of gets that. He may be taking it a bit too far, a bit to the extreme with the David Andrews thing, cutting David Andrews. And I'll take this back if Andrews retires. But if he retires, why not just let him retire a Patriot? Why are you cutting him? Like, if he was going to retire, wouldn't you just say, guys, I'm planning on retiring. Can I just retire and we do a little thing for me and then I'll ride off into the sunset and that'll be that?
The Patriots signed a random tight end from the USFL after the 2023 season.
Oh, okay. Well, worked out great, obviously. I mean, if they hadn't have done that, they might have won 3 games instead of 4. So, you know, there's that, I suppose. I don't know who the player is. Who is the guy? Do we have a name?
LaMichael Petway?
Yes, of course, the LaMichael Petway. Couldn't have... You can't tell the story of the Patriots in 2023 without LaMichael Petway. I mean, that's really vital to that team and everything that may or may not have happened. Don't remember that. Don't really think that's the way they should go. I don't know. I don't think that was a serious call. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. That was supposed to be a Celtics segment. We went way off the rails there. We'll continue with the Cooper Kupp fallout. What are the remaining options? We'll go through the trade market, what they can do in the draft. I'll have what Karen Garigian had to say about Travis Hunter in the wide receiver draft. And also, this ridiculous amount of cap space that they still have, even after their big spending spree. All that coming up next of what's going on here with this Cooper Kupp thing. Because at this point, if you're the Patriots, and you're seeing what what's going on around the league, and you're seeing where you are and where you stand, and the limited options that you have left, it's not a pretty sight. It's really not. And maybe this was part of what they were going to go about doing here. I know that Chris Godwin was their plan A, and Ronnie Stanley was their plan A. But it's been, you know, a couple of days now, almost a full week, and all the plan Bs have been defense. All of them. So at some point, right? At some point, it's got to change. At some point, you got to do something else. At some point, you have to help this offense. And we're all still waiting for that to happen. We know who the free agents are that are still there. I don't think anyone's too in love with Steph Diggs or Amari Cooper or even Keenan Allen. I'm definitely not. You could talk your way into any of them, I guess. I mean, I'd say Cooper's probably at the bottom. Diggs second. Keenan Allen's probably the best of those three options. He had a decent year last year, 700-something yards, 7 touchdowns with Caleb Williams. So, I mean, there may be something still there. But he is trending downwards. Cooper Kupp would have been, I think, a much better acquisition than any of those three. There's other guys I would have taken over Kupp who were gone, who couldn't. I would have taken Godwin. I would have taken T. Higgins. I would have taken lots of the other available free agents. But a lot of them either didn't hit the market or, you know, we've been through this. We've been talking about this for weeks. Then there's other potential trade possibilities. None of them are really great, but there are some names that may get your attention. Chris Olave with the Saints. Tyreek Hill with the Dolphins. Brandon Ayuk. I mean, we can open that door again. Olave got absolutely rearranged this past season, and I think missed most of the year with a head injury. Brandon Ayuk blew out his knee. Tyreek Hill had a down year, but you remember, and remember when he got busted outside of the stadium, and they were handcuffing him, and he's like, "I just had surgery on my hip. Like, I can't do that. I can't do that." It looked like he wasn't really moving the same. He's still pretty good. And if you traded for Tyreek Hill, that makes you better for sure. But it's like, you know, do you feel great about any of these now? These are the other trade options that you have, and the Patriots seem reluctant to do that. They were reluctant to do it with Cooper Kupp. They'd probably be reluctant for Brandon Ayuk, who just had a major injury. Olave, I don't even know if he's on the block, but if he is, I'd imagine they'd probably be reluctant there too. And Tyreek Hill, there's a million reasons to be reluctant about Tyreek Hill. So here you are. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones and talk to David in the car. He has a thought on the USFL and I guess the CFL. Go ahead, David.
Hey, good morning, Arcan. Hope all is well, and thank you for taking the call. So, you know, we kind of dismissed the CFL and the USFL, but when you think about it, right, in baseball and other sports, you have farm teams that you can pull from. You can try out, you can see it in hockey, and obviously. But in the NFL, we don't. And I don't think it's a bad thing that when you have limited of people available, and, you know, there's just depending on a draft from college or somebody becoming a free agent, and then they play the market and they end up re-signing with the same team. So it leaves you very limited people that you can bring in and try out. And I don't think it is a bad thing to have that as an option to pull from USFL on the CFL, because you could end up getting somebody pretty decent, and you won't know until you bring him in and you work him out.
You might be right there, David, you know, but I mean, we're talking about pulling from colleges, and a lot of the USFL and CFL guys go through American college and play in U.S. colleges. So, you know, like that, it's not like they're getting a different crop of players that are playing in the USFL. They're all the same crop of players, and they just go to different places. That's how it works. Now, if you're talking about getting affiliated with the teams, I mean, I guess. I mean, you could do something like that, but the NFL doesn't want that. They want these kids right out of school. They want to bring them in right out of school. That's, you know, they don't want to risk a year or 2 years where they go and play on a feeder team or something like that. You know, maybe there's like semi-pro leagues around the country. And sometimes you have like ex-NFL guys going and rehab and staying in shape with stuff like that. But it's not, you know, it's just there's two, the NCAA and the NFL, I think, are just too interwoven at this point that you can't really have, there's no room for a middleman. They're ready right after college. It's not like in the NHL or Major League Baseball. NBA, not everyone's ready for that now, and because the NBA is much more international, I think, that you get, you know, these players from all over the world who are trying to break their way in. And they have leagues in their own countries, but they do want to come here and, you know, be in the G League or whatever, get as close to the NBA as they can. And in the NFL, you just don't have that. I mean, it's just right out of college. Boom, you're on the team. You know, we're not gonna waste a year or two of you going out there hitting, playing at full speed in some other league. Because, yeah, it's a contact sport. It really is, more than the other ones. It's a much more violent sport than that. You're taking guys out. You can't afford to sacrifice a year or two off one of those contracts. It's no. You need right out of college. Bring them right in. Yeah, that's the way they do it. Steve is in Fall River. Go ahead, Steve.
Good morning, Christian.
Morning, Steve.
You're talking about the lack of attention on the offset, and you were talking about Mike Vrabel wanting to get rid of everything that was previous, do everything this. I think it's distilled down to two things. Still down to cutting David Andrews, and it's also, we have to look at what happened in Cincinnati. Let me start with David Andrews. You brought it up. Oh, what a shame they didn't, you know, let him retire, whatever. They saved $2.7 million. David Andrews wasn't here. There's a fallacy. There's a fantasy that there's some connection. He's a two-time Super Bowl champ, and that's somehow going to be a leader. He's imbued with a leader and leadership, blah, blah, blah. Mike Vrabel looked at that. It's 4 games last year. His pro football is 2 points better than Ben Brown. Let's sign Ben Brown and save you $2.7 million.
His pro football? What are you talking? All right, enough, Steve. Thanks. Thanks for the call. I don't know what you're talking about. But either way, you can't tell me that David Andrews and Ben Brown are the same player. David Andrews is your second-best offensive lineman after Mike Onwenu, and I don't think there's any debating that. He would have been starting all year if he didn't get hurt. And he did get hurt. So, I mean, listen, he may be retiring, and if he retires, then I'll take this all back. But if he has something left in the tank, and this is my complaint, if he has something left in the tank and you're cutting him and he goes and plays somewhere else, the Chiefs sign him or something, the Chiefs are probably going to sign him, let's be honest here. Right? Isn't that a perfect Chiefs signing? Oh, hey, the Patriots had this guy. He's still kind of good. We just lost Joe Tooney. Let's bring in David Andrews. I mean, why wouldn't they sign him? You know, I guess Creed Humphreys, they got a center already. But they can move him over. They can have him play something else. I don't know. I'm sure if he has something left in the tank, someone's going to sign him. He will go play somewhere else. And unless he's a total vestibule, what do you call those things? Turnstile. Unless he's a total turnstile, then I don't see why that was necessary to cut him. You don't have a great offensive line. You don't have some badass offensive line with a bunch of young players coming up ready to take over. You had a practice squad offensive line last year. That offensive line was a joke. I would have probably felt a lot better about it if David Andrews was there playing. And so I guess like that's more my point. It's not even really so much. Maybe he's not the kind of leader that Mike Vrabel looks to, then bring in other guys who are better leaders. But why move on from one of your better offensive linemen when offensive line was a really, really tough part of your season, you know, like a really tough part of your roster? I'd understand moving on from all the other guys on the line, but why David Andrews? Is he so entrenched as a leader with this team that you feel like there's going to be some sort of power struggle? Like, I don't think that's it. I don't really know what it is. But I didn't see the point. I didn't see what the value was. And when he was asked about it, and it was kind of a pointed question, I forget who asked it, but in the press conference, they were like, so if you're all about personality and character and leadership and all that, why did you just cut David Andrews? What's the value in that? And he didn't really answer the question. He just talked about leadership and different ways that leadership can be had if you don't have to be a certain age or play a certain position or whatever. And, I get what he was saying, but it still didn't really answer, well, okay, so why would you move on from David Andrews then? And maybe there's some reason that he didn't want to say. I had no idea, but interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on that interior offensive line. And over the course of this season, wonder if maybe they'd be better off if David Andrews was still there. Again, if he retires, then this is all moot, and I'll shut up and never mention it again. But if not, I will. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls here. Patriots on the table. The Celtics are on the table. We'll get into the Bruins and the Red Sox, who their rotation, the people over at FanGraphs think it's great. One of the best in the league and the best in the American League. We'll break that down as well. The Bruins had a brutal showing yesterday against Tampa. I think we've seen who they really are, and I want to get into the Patriots draft. We'll discuss that with your phone calls right after this.